Musical intro. Forgive me for that. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the BAMF podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty, here with Jim Davies, game designer and cognitive scientist, to talk about his new game on Kickstarter called Things That Go Squeak in the Night. How are you doing, Jim?
Great. Great to see everybody.
Yeah, good to see you. Our stalwart co-host, as always, Mr. Walt Rizzliard. How are you doing, Walt?
Hola. What's going on?
All right. I play the contractually mandated audiovisual intro music. Give me just one second. And gentle listener, that assures you that you're listening to a high-quality, artisanally crafted podcast here at the Network. And built with love. And so we're talking to Mr. Jim Davies, who I don't know if you work for, but certainly you're in a partnership with Gallant Night Games on this particular one.
That's and right.
Let me share the beautiful art you have on your Kickstarter page. Game is called Things That Go Squeak in the Night. It's on Kickstarter right now, and you guys have blown through your funding goal. And it is about a tabletop role-playing game about brave mice in a modern world of urban fantasy.
That's right.
Can you give us the elevator pitch for this bad boy?
Yeah, it's a little like the Rescuers meets Ghostbusters or Supernatural. You're playing heroic mice who defend children from supernatural threats. It's a simple system that I hope people can remember easily and just pick up and play if they want, with lots of adventure generation tables and everything. And an all-ages fun supernatural horror game.
All right, sweet. Well, let's talk about the system. You say it's all-ages. It's easy to play. Can you tell us a little bit about your system?
Sure, sure. So I designed it so that I designed it for my wife, actually, who doesn't like to memorize lots of rules, even with board games. So I made it so that it's pretty quick, and everything you need is on the character sheet. So if you've played it once, just a glance at the character sheet, you should be able to remember how to play.
Can we see that character sheet again real fast? I can put you in a solo layout just so we can
yeah, this is not out. The official one. This is just one I hacked up.
But, okay, cool.
This is the one I've been playtesting with.
Nice. All right.
So everything you need's on here. It uses a dice pool combination with Powered by the Apocalypse system. So what you do is you roll four dice. Anything that's a five or six counts as a point. And you spend the points on perks, which are little lists of things that are good, like sort of like a powered by the Apocalypse pick list. So for example, for the combat move, we have things like I suffer no cost, my opponent is defeated, I choose if nearby things are harmed or unharmed, that kind of thing. So, and it's all player-facing dice rolls. And you might get a plus if you're a warrior, you know, and that's basically the rules. So there are seven basic moves that cover anything anyone's ever tried to do in the game in my years of playtesting it. And you just roll four dice and count the successes and or count the points and pick your perks.
Oh, sweet. Okay, cool. So you've been testing this for years?
Yes, years.
Wow, okay.
I tested it at Metatopia, which is a great game design conference, with all my friends, and played it many, many times. And it's going through many changes. So I'm very confident in the system and how well it works right now.
Oh, cool. And it's just nice to hear, because I know a lot of role-playing game designers, and often playtesting is, oh, yeah, we had some of our buddies play that last weekend. It's good to go. So it's nice to hear someone taking a rigorous approach to it.
Yeah, I was pretty careful. Playing with strangers, having strangers play it without me, blind playtesting, I call that. So, yeah.
Ah, cool. And this is some cool art. This looks a lot like some of the art from Tiny D6 line of games, so I'm guessing. That's the usual artist that Gallant Knight uses.
Yeah, Nick Giacondino, who's a fabulous Argentinian artist that I insisted on. Okay. I had to wait for him because he was busy, but Alan Barr, who runs Gallant Knight Games, said, if you want Nick, you can have Nick. It just might take a little longer. And I said, I'm in it for the long game. I want Nick. And he came up with fabulous drawings. So that cover there is in color, of course, and the rest of it is black and white, which is, I think, really kind of cool for horror. Horror themed stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm very happy with the artwork. He did a great job.
Okay, cool. So just a question off the top of my head is, how do you imbue a game set? I mean, because it's, you have these two flavors, cutesy and horror. How do you get those two things to gel together in a game session?
I think that Tim Burton does it really well. So I think Corpse Bride is kind of a cute horror. Scooby-Doo is a bit of a cute horror. So, you've got you could really tailor it though to your audience. If you're playing with 7 year olds, which I have done, you know, you might have a ghost that's stealing happiness from a kid. You know, you're not going to have really awful stuff. But
like,
you know,
the Grimm's fairy tales.
Yeah, you don't have to have it as bad as Grimm. But you know, if you're playing with a bunch of adults who are used to Call of Cthulhu and you know, Cult Divinity Lost, you can amp it up to whatever you like. But at the, you know, you're fighting these bad things, but at the same time, you're little mice with little thimbles. And if you look at the cover there that you've got on the screen now, we've got a mouse with a screw hook for a weapon, a mouse with a chopstick, a mouse with a needle and a little bottle cap. It's just cute. You know, you ride around on birds and, you know, you might fight a horrible monster, but you're a little mouse. So that's how I thread that needle.
Now, I got a question about one of the characters in the game. So I saw they were using pigeons as air delivery vehicles.
That's correct.
Which is cool as hell. But I've seen two animated videos now, because I have nieces and nephews. Both times the pigeons had like a New York accent. Do the pigeons in this have a New York accent as well?
The character. Okay. So in the world of the game, all animals are intelligent. And they speak a version of the local human language around them, although to humans it just sounds like animal noises. So New York pigeons are going to sound like New Yorkers. You know, you get the pigeons from Toronto, eh? They got to sound like the Toronto pigeons.
Right.
So, and that's cool. And there's the ones from Quebec, they're going to have the Quebec accent.
Right on. Mike, which accent are you going to use?
What city are y'all in?
I'm in Denver. Walt is, what is the name of your town, Walt?
I really don't want to say the name of my city just because it's horrible sounding, but I'm right next to Providence, Rhode Island.
Okay. So, you know, the game has you play an agent of the Mycenaean Council, which is a worldwide network of city-based councils that deal with these supernatural threats. So I encourage people in the game to play in the city that they're familiar with, right? So if you've got a gaming group in Denver, you could have a Denver chapter of the Mycenaean Council.
Yeah, that works. Just like World of Darkness back in the old days.
I love World of Darkness, and I feel like this is sort of my World of Darkness.
I'm right there with you. I was reading some thread on Reddit about gaming nostalgia, and I was like, man, I still kind of bummed that I never got to do a werewolf game dealing with the actual apocalypse, because it was all building up to year 2000, and you're all psyched for it, and then gaming groups fall apart, people move, and you can buy the book. It's not the same as, you know, playing through it.
But, I bet you can find a group that wanted to play that with you.
Yeah, my time is very limited these days.
Yeah, so that's the other thing, isn't it?
So I do 1 hour lunchtime gaming sessions. And I can, you know, other than that, my wife gives me the hairy eyeball, like, what the hell are you doing? This is family time. So, you know, got to parcel it out when I can.
Right.
So Kickstarter, you guys are doing really well.
We reached our first stretch goal last I checked.
Yeah, you've got, 6 or 7 hours to go. So we are down to the wire almost. And first stretch goal, and you are almost $3,000 over the goal. So congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm thrilled. For my first game, I'm glad it's even published. It's just going to be published.
Yeah. And, you know, with the Banff podcast bump, you know, with that wind at your back, you know, who knows how high you can go now. So
sky's the limit. Next stretch goal is a little ribbon bookmark.
Oh, well, that's pretty cool. That's smart, reasonable stretch goals. So many people get themselves in trouble with, like, and our first stretch goal is an entire bestiary. And our second stretch goal
I pitched that to Alan. I could have a bestiary and an adventure guide, and he said, let's save that for another Kickstarter. Game stores like to see an active line, right? So they're more likely to put the original game out if a new supplement comes out later. So I thought, yeah, that's great. Let's just do this, and if people like it, we'll make more.
That makes sense, because it's you show you have some confidence in the line as publisher. It's not just one and done, and that poor little orphan sitting by itself on the shelf. So
yeah.
All right. So inspirations for this game. Obviously, the Rescuers. We talked before the podcast. Sounds like Mouse Guard a little bit, but not as much as you might think looking at some of the art.
Mouse Guard. What I took from Mouse Guard is in Mouse Guard you have little you can have little bug pets. Mm-hmm. Like little insects, and I borrowed that. So there's one class of mouse called the shaman, and they can have a familiar bug. So okay. You could have like a little fly or something that you can meditate and see through the fly's eyes and surveil around or look for a way into somebody's house or something. But you know, Mouse Guard happens in the wilderness with no magic, only a couple animals are sentient, no humans, and this is like, you know, this is This, you're like in the city here, right? You're avoiding the family cat and trying to break into apartments and all kind of stuff.
All right, cool. Have you considered branching out into other small fuzzy creatures as PCs, or not so much?
Absolutely. My next game. So the next game is called Beaks, Wings, and Magical Things, and it's all in the same world, but you get to play bird wizards or fishers or ocelots or whatever you want. It's got rules, or humans. You can play wizard humans or normal humans and all the animals. But it's a much more complex game. It's not compatible with this in terms of rules, because this is a very focused design. And if you're playing with everything from a mouse to a bear, you need a more complex rule system.
That makes sense. Looks like we have a bird wizard right here on the main Kickstarter page.
Yeah, so the bird wizards in this game would be non-player characters. Mice can't be wizards. They can be shamans, where they can have the familiar and kind of a magical sight power. But as far as spellcasting goes, that's reserved for birds and humans.
Ah, all right.
Cool. So here we have a necromancer crow raising an undead rat for likely nefarious purposes.
It's hard to imagine he's raising an undead rat for wholesome purposes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
This sounds like my neighborhood.
Magic is mostly evil in this game, and I really like the idea of some of the tropes of horror, but applied to animals, right? So you think of a ghost or a zombie or something. You think of a human, right? But you know, here we have ghost chipmunks and rattlesnakes and undead cats and cedar waxwings.
A cedar waxwing?
That's a kind of bird. Okay. It's a fruit-eating bird. Maybe not in Denver.
A lot of magpies and crows out here.
Yeah.
So there's a really popular comic book way back in the day. They're still producing some issues of it now. It's called Animosity. The entire world has a some sort of an event, and all of the animals in the world awaken to human level intelligence with the ability to speak as well. And they rebel and start killing all the humans.
That sounds great. Is it good?
It's really good, but it's also really intense. The main storyline revolves around a golden retriever who loves his human. So defends her against the other animals and in like a, hey, you know, we can live with the humans rather than murdering them all kind of deal. Really?
Cool.
Could you play that with this game?
Okay, so there are two levels of this game. One is like you just make up a ghost and you send the mice out and you do whatever. A lot of the book is my lore and my world. You don't have to use that, right? I mean, just like any game, right? What you do at your table is your business. In this world, the animals have a strong desire to not let humans know that they exist, okay? The reasons for that are not given in the book. I've thought about it, but nobody in the world knows the reason. If you wanted to break that rule, you could go ahead, you know. But, you know, the Mycene Council is there to protect human children, right? That's their real focus. So you'd kind of be stretching the game beyond what it's meant to do, to do something like that.
Gotcha.
You know, and the way it works is, you know, you roll the six-sided dice, and for combat, one of the perks you can pick is my opponent is defeated. So the idea of, like, a mouse taking on a human is a little incredulous with like one roll.
Yeah. You know, well, no, there's like, for example, in the game, like you had said, there were multiple animals in the game. So that kind of led me to animosity, because in one of the issues, the dog is having to have this like battle of wills with a tiger. The tiger has escaped the zoo and is going to kill the little girl. And he's just like, no, seriously, this person's on our side. We need to cultivate some of these relationships, you know, and not necessarily beat them with strength, but you know, that conversation that convinces the tiger, well, you know, they do have opposable thumbs. That's kind of cool. But then again, we could use the monkeys, but yet, you know,
yeah.
So,
yeah. So, you know, this game, the player characters are mice in this game.
Right on. Right?
So there are other animals that are in the world and you interact with them a lot. But the main characters are mice.
Gotcha.
So maybe that's a kitbash kind of situation. But so we're talking sequels, right? There's already talking a bestiary sequel, or is that still being developed?
Well, it looks like the game has done pretty well. So I would love to write future lore for this world, adventures. I wrote a piece of software. There's a link to it on the Kickstarter. I wrote a piece of software that generates adventures. So you can just reload the webpage and get new adventures and play through them. But yes, I do have big plans for the world. You know, I'm pitching television shows on the mice, and publishing fiction. And I'd love to, I want to be George Lucas, right? I want to have a huge, I want this world to be big. So games and books.
Well, hang on. You're pitching TV shows?
That's right. Yeah. I pitched to Disney, actually. They're not surprisingly uninterested in an additional mouse property, but I did go to the Ottawa Animation Festival and pitch. You know, I have pitch documents, and I'm trying to get a cartoon made. Yeah.
Oh wow, that's
It's a long shot. I mean,
I understand. It's just literally 5 minutes ago, I was like, I keep wanting to say, well, I could imagine this on Netflix. And I go, no, let's not bring that in. But it looks like you're already thinking along those lines. So
Cool. And it feels cinematic, right? Because. Mm-hmm. You know, what you'll do is you'll have, let's say you two are playing and you got a mouse. One of you's got a dental floss and one of you's got a toothpick and there's a possessed cat and you roll the dice and you get a point and you want to pick my opponent is defeated. So I might say to you, okay, how does it play out? You're two mice defeating a demon cat that can breathe fire. What's the scene like? And people are great at this. And I say, tell it to me like it's a really good movie. It's like, oh, I jump on the back of the cat. I do this and the cat scratches and da da da. But you might have noticed in role-playing gaming, if you're using like a health track and hit points and damage rolls, it feels like it becomes tedious to actually describe how you swing your sword every time. Mm-hmm. But because here it's often one or two rolls that determines the entire outcome of a situation, yeah, you do have some freedom and some fun to describe it like a really cool scene with back and forth and whatever.
Oh, that sounds really interesting. Cool. I look forward to more, and interested to talk to you about what you're doing in the writing sphere, because children's books is a whole market I think a lot of people overlook, but there's just a big ocean of money there.
Well, there's a link in the Kickstarter to some serialized fiction I've been writing for about 3 years called Eve, Pixie, Drowner, and the Mycian Council. So every month an episode comes out. There's about 40,000 words already, and if people want to see what the world is like, it's introducing the world from the perspective of a mouse who kills a pixie out in the woods and gets recruited, gets seen by a chickadee and recruited by the Mycian Council. So he gets an introduction to the world and how it works.
Wow. Okay. This isn't a flash in the pan for you then. You spent some years with this.
Yeah, I'm very much invested in the world and think about it all the time.
Okay, sweet. Well, hey, let me just put the link back up one more time. Hang on. Stop sharing that. There we go. Yeah, no, banner welcome. I'm working on it. All right. If you do a search for Kickstarter and things that go Spooky the Night, it's the first one that comes up. If you want to look at the whole long link, it's here right beneath Walt. Gallant Knight Games, things that go Spooky the Night on Kickstarter. Got 67 hours left, so don't sleep on it. Jump over there right
December
now.
December 10 is the last day.
Yeah, it's coming up fast. So check it out. You can get in there right now, and they are knocking out stretch goals as we speak. So this is the time to jump on that bandwagon. So, Jim, thank you so much for coming out today. Any closing thoughts?
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for chatting with me, and thanks for helping publicize role playing games.
Hell yeah!
Walt, any closing thoughts, sir?
No, but this looks kind of cool. I kind of want to see the animated. That'd be fun.
Yeah. All right, everyone indulge me for 3 seconds while I play our contractually obligated musical outro.
And very nice.
On that happy note, we will catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.
Bye. Woo.